our Lord and our Redeemer. Amen. Chapter 30, the words of Agur. Now this Agur, all we know is that he's the son of Japheth. There's no other reference to him that we have that we can learn more about him. He's just, this man, his name means compiler. And maybe this is an unknown compiler that wrote the things that are here. But there's some things in this book that are very interesting and very profitable. For example, he says, beginning in verse 5, every word of God is pure. He is a shield to those who put their trust in him. Jesus, praying to the Father, John 17:17, said, Father, sanctify them. Sanctify means to set aside for a holy purpose. But sanctify them by thy truth. Thy word is truth. And so we should long and look. As Solomon said, or rather, David said back in Psalms 119:11, your word have I hidden in my heart that I may not sin against you. And so the more the word is in us, the more we are apt to follow the Lord faithfully in all that we do. That's a wonderful thing. And then and Jesus said in John 14:6, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. He who comes to the Father, no one comes to the Father except through me. So truth, we must love the truth. You know, in that song, the man from La Mancha, in his quest, he said, to follow truth as blind men long for sight. To me, that's very expressive. You can imagine how blind men would long for sight. We should have that same loving and longing for the truth of God's word. Then he also says in the latter part of that verse, do not add to his words, lest he rebuke you and you be found a liar. You know, toward the end of the New Testament, almost at the very end, in Revelation 22, verses 18 through 20, we have these words and this warning. For I testify to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If anyone adds to the things, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And if anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part from the tree of life and from the holy city and from the things which are written in this book. And then, going back to the Old Testament, do you remember when Joshua took over as the leader of Israel? God said that I will not fail you and I'll not forsake you. But he gave a codicil to that. And he said in verses 7 and 8, only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper in the way that you go. So we go to the Word to find truth, and we stay with the truth. We stay with the Word, and we don't presume to know more than God knows. I remember hearing many times Brother J. U. Dunn, Sr., an old-time gospel preacher, says, when it comes to what God has not said in His Word, I am very ignorant. And we'd all do well in our commenting on things that God has revealed, that beyond this, to be very ignorant about them. Okay, moving on down. Two great things that Agur asked of the Lord. Two things I request of you. Deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies from me. All during this study, we have tried to emphasize that truthfulness and honesty are the very foundation of character. And if one is one that loves the truth, follows the truth, believes the truth, practices the truth, he will be pleasing to God. But if we get off of that, get to be dishonest, well, this is displeasing to God. You know, We have Sam Walton, that was the founder of the Walmart chain and of stores, and also the Sam's, had one of his district managers to call him and said, "Look, we have a young man in one of my stores in this district that just has too much talent for where he is. In fact, other companies are trying to take him away from him." He said, "I believe if he came to the corporate office, you'd find that he is of that quality of man, and that he would then stay with the company." So Sam had his secretary make an appointment for him to come to Bentonville, where the main headquarters was. And he came, and they had a wonderful conversation during some 2 or 3 hours before lunch. But Sam always made a practice of having all of his visitors come to go through the company cafeteria. And it was all Dutch treat. He paid for his, the other managers paid for theirs, and the guests paid for his. And so they lined up, and Sam put this young man in front, and he followed along behind, and he just watched. I don't know if he's watching to see if he's going to be a glutton or see how he treated the people there or just what. But anyway, everything went all right until he got toward the end of the line, and Sam watched, and he took 2 little squares of butter, laid them on his plate, and then moved on to the bread area, and he took a piece of bread and covered those 2 pats of butter with the bread. Well, he watched to see if that was accidental. And here the man went up to the cash register, and the cashier charged everything except 20 cents worth of butter. And Sam didn't say anything then, but went back to the office, and he told the young man, said, "You go back, and I'll call your decision." Well, when he left, Sam said, "That man will not be in our organization. In fact, I want him taken out of the whole company when you can, because he's a thief." Well, you might say, he was a little overbearing, 20 cents worth of butter. But Leonard Johnson used to say, if you want to know which way the wind is blowing, you don't look at the side of the barn. You look at the leaves or the tall grass. It is the small things that tend to reveal character. And Solomon, in the Song of Solomon, said, "Beware of the foxes, the little foxes that destroyed the vineyard." And so those little bitty things can destroy one, and it reveals character. And Jesus said the same thing. He that is unfaithful in that which is unfaithful in little will be unfaithful in that which is unfaithful in much. And then he that is faithful in that which is little will be faithful in that which is much. And so little bitty things reveal the character of a person. And here's a man lost his future with Walmart because of 20 cents worth of butter. He says that's one gift that he wanted, to be totally honest, always honest, and to remove falsehood and lies far from me. Then he has a second request that is equally important. He says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and proclaim the name of my God." Paul said, "Godliness with contentment is great gain. And we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we'll carry nothing out. But having food and clothing, be ye therewith content." Then he warns about love being the root of all kinds of evil. And then he goes on to say there are 3 things that rich people need to keep in mind. Number one, don't be high-minded. Number two, don't have your hope set on the uncertainty of riches. And number 3, be rich in good works. 2 weeks ago, I was talking with a wealthy friend of mine, And we were talking about the rapid advance in value of his stock. Back 15 years ago, I bought 1,000 shares of his stock for $13. And here they went down to 8 or 9 and then back up and finally got to 13 and then got up to $15. And I said, I'm tired of looking at this. So I sold them and earned $2,000. I thought that was a good profit on it. Well, he said, and he warned me, said, you better keep that stock. It's going to be good, going to be high. And I said, well, thank you. But I'm just tired of fooling with it. And when he was talking with me, he said, we were talking about the rapid advancement of his stock. And he said, if you'd kept that stock, do you know what it'd be worth, what it'd be worth today? I said, a lot, but I've never figured it up. So he got his calculator and figured. He said, okay, wasn't long after that, the company gave everyone 4 shares for 1, so you would have had 4,000 shares of stock. And you know what one of those shares is worth for now? 460-something dollars. He said if you had, he figured it out at 460, said if you had kept that stock, you would now have stock worth $1,840,000. I said, well, brother, I'm not going to lose a wink of sleep over that. Paul said, if you have food and clothing, I have food and clothing, have shelter over my head. I don't have anything that I really need that I can't afford to buy. And so at the age of 95, I would hate to have someone to write me out a check for $1,840,000 and then have the responsibility of using that in a way that will please God. I've got too many other things to do that are more important than that. And money can be a curse to you. Now, I've got to say with my friend, on all 3 things that Paul mentioned, I'd give him an A. But let me tell you about another friend. This goes back further, a few years. Had a friend that was a coal miner. And he was got the coal that was a surface coal, not the deep coal. And he got 40 acres of land to find the coal on it, and there wasn't as much fill on top of it as the geologists had predicted, and the vein of coal was much thicker than he had predicted. So he made a lot of money. He called me one day, and he said, could I come up and have lunch with you tomorrow? And I said, sure. He said, I want to show you my new car. So he came up and looked at it, and it was a Bentley, English made. Cost him $275,000. And what was also more shocking than that, he at that time was 72 years old and had married a 19-year-old Filipino girl. Well, we didn't get to the lunch any faster. We didn't get any safer than I could have gone in my car. And I certainly didn't need a 19-year-old Filipino girl as my wife. And I thought, what a waste of that money. And so there's a responsibility that goes with what you have. And at my age, I wouldn't want the responsibility of fooling with all that much money. Because everyone that heard of it, my mailbox would be full of requests. I'd get them all during the night. Said, I heard you had got a little extra wonder. And I've helped a lot of people, and they would come in for more help. And then I've asked a lot of people for help for the school. But I tell you, brother, I honestly say that I'm not going to lose a minute's sleep over that. I did 2 or 3 this morning at 4 o'clock when I was thinking about what I was going to say today and just how to put that. But he said, don't give me too much, Lord, lest I be full and deny you. You know, money brings power, and power evokes pride. And before the Israelites went into the land, Moses said to them, now you're going into a land. You're going to live in houses you didn't build. And you're going to reap crops that you didn't plant. And you're going to be able to prune trees and vines that you didn't plant. He said, know you that Jehovah it is that gives you power to get wealth. And he said, now be sure you remember that. Don't forget, it's not your goodness. And so everyone needs, that has wealth and gets wealth, need to realize that it comes from God and it comes with a grave, burdensome responsibility. Well, pass it on from that. He then goes into five sayings that are referred to as some of the numerical proverbs. It has a style for three, yea, for four, for three, yea, for four. You know, the book of Joel has that, where God says, for three sins of one of the neighbors of Israel that was their enemy, yea, for four, I'll destroy them. That went on seven times, and then the eighth time, God spoke to his own people and said, for three of your sins, yea, four. Now, these numerical proverbs, there are five of them here in the 30th chapter, are of that same kind of thing. And I don't know if it's designed to impress the importance of it, or if maybe it's a tool that helps in the memory. You know, the 119th, well, no, that we'll wait for that later. But here he says, beginning in verse 15, there are three things that are never satisfied, four never say enough. The grave, the barren womb, the earth that is not satisfied with water, and the fire never says enough. Well, you see some of these western fires and they're crying, give us more. Well, that was one thing that interested him. Then look in verses 18 and 19. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, four I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a virgin. Well, some of you ladies might sort of contest him on that point. Okay, then again in 21 and 23, there are three things that the earth is perturbed, that is disturbed. Yes, for four it cannot bear, it cannot bear up. For a servant when he reigns, a fool when he is filled with food, a hateful woman when she is married, and a maidservant who succeeds her mistress. And then still in chapter 30, verses 24 through 28, there are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. You wonder how those little heads there can say, now we're not going to eat this, we're going to have this for wintertime. But God put in those little ant heads the instinctive knowledge of knowing you've got to make preparation because there's coming a time when there's not going to be any food available. And you either save some or else you're extinguished. But he says the ants. And you know, we used to have sermons on this. We'd say the ants answers the question of when. Prepare in summer, be ready in winter. And then he said the rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in the crags. This little rock badger looks a lot like a squirrel, a little fatter than a squirrel, but he's very feeble, doesn't have much defense, but he knows where to build his house, in those crags or in those rock cracks where he can be there and get in it and then defend what he has to at the door. Okay, so here with the rock, Craigs, we say this is where you should build, where you're strong and where there is strength and where you're surrounded by that. And then the locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. And this tells what they do. Here they are lined up. They come in. They don't get in each other's way. And boy, they eat everything in sight. And they can even clean the bark off of the trees with the lead. And that often happened in Palestine. And so they answer, what do you do? And then finally, says the spider skillfully grasps with its hands and is in kings' palaces. And this says, how? With the skill of its hand, the little spider just spins a web. And you could even go into the palace. So there in some corner, you'd find where a spider was. It spun his web. Then one other he has in verses 29 and 31. There are three things which are majestic in pace, four which are stately in walk, a lion which is mighty among beasts, and does not turn away from any, a greyhound, a male goat also, and then a king whose troops are with him. And so he's imagining these things come out and said, these are things that are strong, and these are the things that do not hold back for anything. Well, interesting, and profitable. Now in chapter 20 or 31, the last chapter, you have here what the conservative scholar would say begins with instruction of Bathsheba to young Solomon as he is either before he became king or early in the days of his kingship. And there are three things that she reminds Solomon of, two of them that are negative and one that's positive. Here she says, do not give your strength to women nor your ways to that which destroys kings. Well, you know how many have been destroyed for the lack of a good woman. And so he said, now you be careful. Be careful about a wife and don't give your strength to women. Well, we'd hardly say he followed that with 300 wives and 700 concubines. But a second one, she says, strong drink. Strong drink. It's not for kings, old Lemuel. It's not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his misery and remember or his poverty, and remember his misery no more. You just say the only way to use a wine is like something that'll get you out of your senses. And you imagine before the days of a lot of our antiseptics, the pain. I've read about how that in World War or in the Civil War, there was no anesthetic, and oftentimes legs were literally sawed off with nothing except some liquor to drink to try to put one out of the misery. And so the only use of that would be in that sort of a thing. And then the third one, I think, is a beautiful one. This is positive. And here she is urging Solomon to be a voice for the voiceless. Speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. And we all know that in life, there are some people that have influence, and there are some that don't have much. And here's one downtrodden, run over, neglected, forgotten, And she is saying, Solomon, remember those. Speak up for them. And we've pointed out how that all through the Old Testament, God has been the champion of the underdog. Jesus was the champion of the underdog. Well, when you look at his relationship with women, you can see why they were the last at the cross and first at the tomb. Here you, as you think about these, that Samaritan woman there in John 4, how that he took a woman that had been married five times, and some think that she came to the well at noon because it was less embarrassing there. Not others came at noon. But he took her and not only taught her the truth, but through her, even though she was a woman, an outcast, had influence in the community because of her spirit and her enthusiasm, and enabled the Lord to stay there 2 days teaching those Samaritans. And then, who can forget John 8? For here's a woman taken in adultery. And they said, Moses' law says, stone her, what do you say? And Jesus paused and let them think for a while, wrote in the sand, and then they kept pushing him. And he rose up and said, let him that is without a sin cast the first stone. And beginning with the oldest to the youngest, they vanished away. Then I think about that woman that came into Simon's house. Christ was having lunch with Simon a Pharisee, one of the most strict of all the Jews. And this woman, well known in the city for her lifestyle, I don't know how in the world she had the courage to walk into Simon's house, fall down at the feet of Jesus, anoint his feet, kiss him, dry his feet with his hair, with her hair. And here's Simon saying to himself, if he knew what kind of woman that was, he'd never let her touch him. Jesus said, Simon, I want to tell you something. If a man is forgiven 100 shekels and another 500 shekels, which would love the more? He said, oh, I suppose the one given 500. Jesus said, you've spoken well. And let me tell you, this woman whose sins are many has been forgiven. Therefore, she loves the more. Then you think of his behavior with Mary Magdalene, cast out 7 demons from that woman, and she became as close to him as any other woman, probably other than perhaps his mother. Then how he took care of his mother, and how he took care of Mary and Martha Bethany. And so Christ had concern for those that were left behind. When he was accused of being a sinner of public, or being a friend of publicans and sinners, and even eating with them, he was proud of that. He wasn't ashamed of doing that. He was proud of it. Because he said, the Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. And there are more lost and who realize they're lost in these undercurrents than those in more, quote, respectable society. Okay, so open your mouth for the speechless. In the cause of all who are appointed to die, open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Now, in the last part of chapter 31, we have an acrostic eulogy of the worthy woman. You know, acrostic is where you have things of a similar type together. In this case, all of the sentences, 22 sentences in the original about the worthy woman are continued with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The same is true as the 119th Psalm. Same is true of the first 4 verses of Ecclesiastes. And so this may be to help them remember, because, you know, a lot of times when you have a first word of something, well, then it brings it back. So you found the first word of these with the Hebrew alphabet. I never study the Hebrew alphabet. I don't know my ABCs in Hebrew. But 22 letters, And each of these begins with a different. I want to point out 8 traits of this worthy woman. But first of all, consider what Solomon says. Who can find a worthy woman, a worthy wife? For her worth is far above rubies. There's no price you can put on her. She's so rare, so valuable. There's no way to set a price on her. There's nothing in material wealth that can equal her value. Then trait number 1, this worthy woman is trustworthy. A wonderful trait. In verse 11 and 12, the heart of her husband safely trusts her. So he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Then down in verse 23, her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. Well, her income that she brought into the family enabled this husband to be free from monetary things enough to be a leader among the people, one that sat with the council of the city. And you know, in the Jewish law, a synagogue could not be built unless there were 10 men of leisure. That is, 10 men who did not have to work every day that could be present every time the synagogue was open, because they didn't believe there was a congregation if they didn't have at least 10. And so 10 men of leisure. And now this husband can sit among the decision makers for the community there at the gate. Now, I want to compare her with someone we have studied before. Proverbs chapter 7 and 15 through 20. This is the wicked, the unfaithful, the adulterous wife. Listen to her talk. She finds this young man that has come along her way, and she says, "Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home on the appointed day." Would you not hate to have a wife that if you left the house wondered what she's going to be doing? Let me tell you, I tell you this because you won't remember it. 70 years ago, there was a couple in this congregation where the young man had suspicions about his wife and another man. And so he read Popular Mechanics or somewhere, got information on how to wire your telephone so that you wire it and hook it up to a computer, and then whenever it rings and the receiver is lifted, that computer comes on. And so he hid the computer under the bed and then had the phone wired. Well, a few days his wife was gone, and he got it out and listened to the tape. And sadly, it confirmed what he was suspicious of and destroyed their marriage. Ah, but that faithfulness, dependability, tremendous, tremendous trait. Then also look, and she is industrious. 31:13, she seeks wool and flax and worketh and willingly works with her hands. 31:15, she also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidens. And then 31:18-19, and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands with a distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. Of course, they're weaving. But these little lamps they had, you could hold them in your hand. They'd have a little round place here to put the oil in, and then a stem, and then the wick would go there, and you'd light the end of the stem. They couldn't hold enough oil to last all night. So to have a lamp in the window to guide someone in the darkness all night long would mean that she'd have to get up, arrange to have someone get up and replenish the oil in the lamp all during the night. This again showing her industriousness. Then notice she's wise. 31:14, she is like the merchant ship that brings her food from afar. She searches around to find the best bargain. Now that doesn't mean driving 5 miles to get two cents less on your gas, but what is a real bargain? Where you find foods that are good. And of course that in Paul's day brought about a problem because meat sacrificed to idols came at a reduced price in the market. And the question, is it lawful for a Christian to eat this meat that's been burned to an idol? Paul said, that's meat. Eat and ask no questions unless it offends a brother. So here she is one that sought the things that were good for them to have and brought them from afar. Then notice further on her wisdom. She perceives that she has a good business sense. She perceives that here's a piece of land that's a good buy. And she apparently, out of her household budget, has saved money, and she buys the land. Not to lie fallow, but she has grapevines, olive trees plenty there, and then gains money from that. That enables her to take care of her family and help her husband out, as we have mentioned. And so, good business sense. And then it says she perceives that her goods are worthwhile. In other words, you couldn't beat her in a trade to buy. Said, well, this is a woman, I'll just buy this for whatever. Not this woman. She knows what its value, and she'll hold it what its value. You know, there used to be a lot of discussion about mothers working out of the home. And today, according to the statistics, there are 57 to 65% of all married women work out of the home. World War II came along and it became necessary to get more labor, and a lot of women went to work and in different kinds of work. I had a cousin, Robbie. She worked at the shipyard in Mobile. She was not a clerk or not a cook or not an assistant. She was a welder, and she welded those big old battleships that went out. So they had a sign, you remember, Rosie the Welder, showing her muscles and how that women could do what men could. But you don't hear that much anymore. But then it says she stretches out, she remembers the poor. She stretches out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reaches out her hands to the needy. And then I want to put this along with it, verse 36 or 26. She openeth her mouth with wisdom and the law of kindness on her tongue. I found a lot of times that people who are industrious themselves are very inconsiderate of those that are not as blessed. And particular their sharpness. I'm doing this, but if you'd managed like you ought to, or if you'd worked as much as you ought to, you wouldn't have to have this handout and make them feel like poor beggars. Brother Turner tells about being in Cullman one time years ago. Went to the store, the wealthiest member of the church in Cullman, and asked for support for the school. Said he went over to the cash register, got out a $10 bill, and gave it to him and said, now, Rex, I don't want you coming by to see me every time you're in town. He said, it made me feel like a beggar. He said, I wish I'd had the courage to say, you need this more than I do, but we needed it too much. Well, I've raised a lot of money, but I've never felt like a beggar because the Lord has blessed me. I've never had to ask for myself. I was asking for a cause. And I believed I was selling satisfaction. So she remembers the poor. And in doing so, did not do anything to debase them. Then she is strong and courageous. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laugheth at the time to come. She's not afraid of the winter because she already has warm clothes that she's made for the children. Then last of all, she fears Jehovah. In verses 30 and 31, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, She shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands. Let her own works praise her. And then finally her reward. Her children rise up and call her blessed. You know how helpful and how beautiful that would be. But her husband also says, many women have done well, but you excel them all. She's not like Tom, or Tex rather, who had married Alice, and they were going on in the buggy off for a day or two, and said, Alice, do you know I love you? She said, of course I do. We just got married. But I'm going to always love you. Believe that? She said, yes. Tex said, well, I don't want to hear any more about it. Well, most women won't get by on that. But he praises her and tells them, you're great. And then God praises, says, the woman that fears Jehovah, she shall be praised. And the end. Been a great journey for me. I hope you have enjoyed it. And even beyond what we have studied, I hope it will encourage you to go back and reread this great book and think about illustrations in your own life.